This is a Lip Media podcast.
This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Woolgaroo-Coobah, Bindal and Wurundjeri peoples. The country we now call Australia was built on the stolen lands of hundreds of unique Indigenous nations, and we recognise that as white women, we continue to partake in and benefit from the act of colonisation. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging.
Book Slut.
Hello, welcome to Book Slut. My name is Sam, and with me I have my partner in crime, Abby.
Topical.
So, I read a book called Lesbian Cops.
It's really, they've let themselves down on the title, really.
Well, wait for it. The subtitle is Erotic Investigations.
Okay, I take it all back.
So today we're going to talk a bit about, the sexualization of police and how that kind of plays out. As will soon be revealed, Abby and I have both...
dabbled?
You've both dabbled in abolition theory, and we're definitely going to reveal our hand today a bit, I think, about our politics on this topic.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting, like, I'm very excited for it. The police to me are a very kind of complicated organization.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, we both, again, laying cards on the table, we both align more on the ACAB side of things than
yeah
than the other.
I've come across quite a few people on dating apps that have ACAB in their profile now. I'm like, oh.
I feel like it really took off after Black Lives Matter. It's become like there's quite an upsurge. And for people like myself who have been semi-quiet abolitionists for some time.
Brewing underneath.
It's been really exciting to see people thinking about alternative mechanisms for community safety, which is what, if the police were functioning, is what they should be working towards. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm going to try and hold back on like all of the abolitionist discussions I want to bring into this.
So this book I got it in a hard copy. It is not a Scamazon purchase.
Wow. Yeah. I'm so proud of you.
Yep. I went out of my way to go and buy it. And I think that the story of buying it is actually really relevant to this because I went to this bookstore in Fitzroy, which is really famous. It's called Hares and Hyenas. And I think it's Australia's like most famous gay bookstore. And it's great. Love it in there. I ended up buying way more than just this. But it was funny because I went up to the counter and I was like, I am not shy about buying erotica by this point. Like, we've been doing this for long enough that I'm like, yeah, this is what I'm buying.
Do you want to scroll through my Kindle?
But I got up there and I was like, oh my God, I am mortified by buying this book about police erotica. And I felt I started to, you know, do that thing where you're like, oh yeah, it's for a project, I'm research. And the guy behind the counter was like, okay. And I was like, no, really, I have a podcast. But we got into this discussion because for people who don't know, in 2019, Hares and Hyenas was raided by the cops and it ended up being like super violent. One of the people who was on the premises, I think one of the owners, I can't remember, my memory's failing me.
My understanding is that the owner sleeps above the store or there's a residence above the store and the cops went into the residence.
Yeah, so that man ended up in hospital with like really severe injuries, like several broken bones and like arm pulled from his socket essentially, and it was really horrific. So we like had a bit of a, it was just kind of this like awkward, funny, awful but kind of sweet conversation at the counter about like police and kink and like brutality but then being hot. It was very awkward. But they were lovely about it. And I think I maybe convinced them that I wasn't into cops, but anyway.
I think, and it is hard, like police have had a really bad relationship with kink, with the LGBTIQ community, policing fundamentally is around enforcing the laws of the state. Yeah. And if your lifestyle is outlawed by the state, then the police are the ones that you have the interactions with who enforce those laws. So it's, to me, very understandable that minority groups, that, you know, a whole bunch of people do not consider the police to be safe. They consider them the absolute opposite.
Absolutely. For just to like an update on that, the whole hares and hyenas situation, IBAC found that there was no excessive use of force in the raid. So, you know, police accountability is alive and well in Australia.
I am not going to say what I want to say about IBAC. That is,
that is where you draw the line.
That is where I'm going to draw the line.
So, this is a collection of short stories. The first one I wanted to tell you about, this is just a short and sweet one, is called How Does Your Garden Grow? And it's set in Australia, which I was like, oh, in Queensland, actually, your neck of the woods. In the story, this policewoman goes out to the bush to investigate a tip-off about some woman growing pot in her backyard, in her veggie garden. And this woman finds this policewoman searching through her garden and eating raspberries and like fruit and stuff from her garden.
What the hell?
Get a warrant. Fucking hell.
Yeah. I mean, firstly, also, like, are you a gremlin? Like, what? Where are your manners?
She's just like, I don't know.
Might eat a strawberries. Nom, 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 nom.
Anyway, because one of the things that fascinates me about this idea is, like, how do you get from, like, an interaction with the police? Like, what is the erotic context where it escalates to having sex with them? And in this story, it was as simple as she wiped some of the raspberry off her face and then it was on.
Right.
So they end up having sex outside and it was, like, it was actually quite nice. Like, the sun was shining and, like, they have sex in the garden and...
I wonder if this was written when the gay panic defence was still a thing in Queensland.
Oh, that adds.
Just saying, it's real dangerous.
Fucking hell. How long, when was that? When did that, when was that?
I'm gonna Google.
It's going to be like alarmingly recent, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep. Queensland.
2017?
Ooh, this was written in 2011. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's so bleak.
Anyway, but this story is much more, you know, a happy ending.
Yeah, well, they have, like, quite pleasant sex, and there's a lot of focus on how much pubic hair this woman has. They've kind of framed
her. Which one? The police or the...
No, the...
growing.
The pot grower.
Right.
And I'll keep this one brief because there's not a lot to it. They essentially have sex in the sun, and then afterwards the woman is like, now what? And then the police officer is like, now I need to check the house, ma'am. I have a tip-off about something that may be hidden in your bed. Do I need a search warrant? And then they go into her house to keep having sex.
I mean, why the ruse at that point? Like,
I don't think it was a ruse. I think it was like, I'm a police officer. I have immense power over you. Isn't that funny? So that was just a light and breezy one before we... Just a little warm-up.
Yeah, great. Can't wait.
So the next one is called Cop at My Door. And I think it's worth highlighting here that, like you said, the interactions with police will vary greatly depending on who you are. And so if you're a white woman and there's a cop at your door, it's likely to be a very different experience to if you are an Indigenous person or a Black person or a person of colour. Mm. And all of the stories I read in this absolutely felt like white women. They would read completely different if they were written for an audience that was anyone other than people who have no reason to necessarily fear the police at first encounter.
And something that we need to keep in the forefront of our mind, that even now, as a white woman, you know, I remember when I started to distrust the police, and a lot of that was around the work that I was doing at the time and seeing the way that they treated people. But I still don't fear them.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's a massive difference. And that's because I'm a white woman. I understand that if I go up to the police, they're probably going to help me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so my interactions with them are colored by that, you know? And also, you know, I'm a white woman who comes from a middle-class family. I was taught that, you know, if there are problems, you call the police.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm the same, and important to keep that in mind. And it's something that definitely I really struggled with, the sort of like erotic side of these stories, because it was just like underpinned while reading it, being like, ugh, it's just not how it would go down, you know?
And it's interesting. It's interesting to me, like, the eroticization of police and the army in particular. Because I don't get it anymore. And I wonder if, like, I was never really exposed to erotica involving army or police, you know, when I was younger. But I wonder if before I'd had as many interactions with police as I have had now, if I had come across this, if I would get it. And the reason that I don't get it now is because if I see somebody in a uniform or a cop in uniform, I'm automatically on edge, you know, like thinking about what's going on, checking where my phone is if I need to take a video, you know, like,
yeah,
all of these
absolutely
things
that absolutely
that really harsh the erotic desire within me.
Yeah, absolutely the same. I cannot stress enough how unarousing I find the police to be. Sexually, at least, like, arousing of like discomfort, sure, but
I looked into a bit about, you know, how essentially this idea of a man in uniform, right? Mm-hmm. And why it's such a common trope and why people find it attractive. There were a few kind of common threads that came up in my very scientific research on Quora.
We have such a vast array of sources in our bibliography.
It's interesting because the same reason that they were saying this is why women are attracted to men in uniform is the same reason why I'm automatically not. It's because of those immediate connotations between a uniform and all of these personality traits.
Mm-hmm.
So they were saying, like, women are attracted to men in uniform because of the idea of chivalry. You know, you think that the person's going to be a gentleman and all of this. Authority.
No.
Which I also, you know, I have a
problem. I mean,
with
you
authority.
Had a problem with authority since you've been like a kid at school.
Bravery and commitment. You know, it's like these connotations that you have with someone's uniform, it's about their job and what you think their job is. Whereas for me, my immediate connotations are completely different to that. So it makes sense to me that if I see someone with a uniform, I'm going to be like, oh, nope. My vagina is going to shrivel up inside itself. Whereas another woman will see that uniform and, yeah, will absolutely think this person is a hero, so brave, whatever.
I find the hero thing interesting because, say, some strippers rocked up at my house. What are you doing here?
Come in. Would you like to inspect my bed?
I would be down for a fireman stripper, but I would not be down for a policeman stripper.
No, and, exactly. Exactly.
And it's, I don't know if it's the hero thing that would get me going with the fireman, but I mean, I don't know. They're kind of hot, you know?
It's the suspenders. Police don't have suspenders.
Oh, yes. Good point. Good
and
point.
And the hard hat. Well, it's interesting. I read this study, actually, that was done in 2015. And it was an archival study on US-American soldiers who fought in World War II.
Oh, okay.
So they did a control sample of 449 regular veterans and 123 surviving Medal of Honor recipients. And they found that the people who had won the Medal of Honor sired more offspring than regular veterans. And they were talking about it's a causal link between heroism and mating success, and how, you know, there's this essentially, I mean, they were positing it as like a biological need of women to essentially like have babies with heroes.
And right. Did they try to relate it back to being like, well, in cavemen days?
Yeah, I saw a few of that. I don't know if this study did, but I saw that in a few things. Yep. I saw it on Quora, actually.
That's where I'd expect it to come up.
But they said they found evidence that female participants specifically regard men more sexually attractive if they are war heroes. Then it said, this effect is absent for male participants judging female war heroes, suggesting that bravery in war is a gender-specific signal.
Ugh, I mean, that's unsurprising.
But, and then my final thing about the uniform is that my favorite explanation for it. So it was a lot of this chivalry, bravery, blah, 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 blah. But my favorite was called gift appeal. And it says...
Gift appeal?
Yeah. So it's essentially like unwrapping somebody, you know, like their uniform is like they're wrapping.
Right. Okay. Sure.
No.
I mean,
I think there's something about it being so like starched and you know, like a lot of these uniforms are real, like, I guess kind of
crisp
and kind of, they look quite constrictive to me. Like, you know, it's kind of like a little bit of messing someone up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I can see that. I think it's interesting that like obviously uniforms come up a lot in sexual fantasies and kink. They are often really gendered as well. Things like a police uniform, army uniform. You see them obviously on men, but also when they are worn by women, they are highly gendered. Mm. That, you know,
become like sexy. Yeah, sexy cop and you know, yeah. but then there are ones for women like the nurse that you don't really
or
see,
like French maid
that you don't really see on men, and they're all of the you know, what would be considered caring, more kind of submissive uniforms than things like policemen, firemen. Sorry, police person, fire person. We should probably stop saying policeman.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Some of the ones that are coded for women are like French maid, schoolgirl, lots of problems associated with that one. Cheerleader, lots of problems associated with that one. like you would never, can you imagine it being like, oh yeah, I just love it when my man dresses up like a schoolboy. Like, you just, it's just not a thing.
I mean, it probably is to an extent in like age play, things like that. There would be men
but it's
not a pop culture
mainstream.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like everybody would have a scene from a movie or a scene from a TV show where there's a sexy nurse or, you know, whatever. Yeah. And when a woman does dress up as police, it's always a kind of flip on what's considered the normal dominant submissive roles.
Totally.
Which part of me is like, yeah, no, I get the dominant and submissive part. Like, why do we have to involve a badge?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that will come up in one of the other stories as well, like how this kind of plays into power play and authority. And I, on the one hand, I get it, but on the hand, it just makes my skin curl.
Your skin curl?
Yeah.
Skin crawl?
Curl? Crawl.
My skin just curls up off my body.
Ew. Gross. Should we get back to the sexy stuff?
Let's get on to the erotica, shall we?
Oh, man. Okay, so Cop at My Door is the story's name. And so it's about these two women housemates. They're best friends, Morgan and Lisa. And their neighbor, who is always calling the police to make complaints about them for like totally unreasonable things, you know. And so one of the housemates, Morgan, has a crush on this policewoman who always comes to the house when these complaints get made. And so the cops show up and Morgan's friend Lisa does a solid wingwoman move and calls away the other police officer so that Morgan can have some alone time with her crush.
Ooh.
Ooh. And so they flirt a little and they're obviously like they've been in this situation like a number of times because this neighbor has got a real bee in her bonnet. And so they flirt a little and then as the cops are leaving, Morgan is like, well, until next time, I guess make sure you bring the uniform. It does something for you. And I was like, cringe. Oh my God.
Oh my
Mortifying
God.
That you would say that.
Were you there? Or I don't know, in my early 20s, I was at Spleen in Melbourne. And
Spleen, the queen of Spleen.
And which is a bar. And I met these cops there. Did I tell you?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Like they were chatting to me. They were older gentlemen. I was in my early 20s. I was like, you know, what do you do? And they were like, oh, we're cops. And I was like, bullshit, you're cops. Like, what are you doing in Spleen? like, sure, whatever. I full on didn't believe them. And he's like, all right, well, do you want to see my badge?
Ugh.
And I was like, yeah, fine. Show it. And so he showed me his badge. And I was like, you can get those at, like, dress-up stores. I still don't believe it. And he was full on, like, using his copdom as a pickup technique.
Gross.
But like this.
Gross.
He was unprepared for me being like, ugh.
Yeah, right. And I'm not surprised by that at all. Like, I bet it happens all the time. Just imagine you being like super belligerent at Spleen, being like, nah, it's not even real.
And then I was
get
like,
backed.
Why would anybody just walk around with a make-believe police badge in their pocket? Like,
oh yeah, I mean, that's a huge red flag.
I was just making him into even more of a creep.
He was like, you have the right to remain sexy. Fuck off. Okay, so she says this terrible line to this cop, and they leave. Later on that evening, Morgan's at home. Lisa's gone out on a date. Good one, Lisa. And then Officer Brewer is the name of the policewoman. Officer Brewer shows up and is just like, oh, I just wanted to check on you. And Morgan's like, okay. So she invites her in for a drink. She's still in her uniform at this point. She's off duty, but she's still in her uniform. And Morgan's like internally frothing the uniform. And so they have this like really awkward conversation over a glass of rosé.
Mm. Oh, Officer Brewer, let your hair down.
Right? So they're chatting and Morgan's like, oh, so, you know, what is it like to be a cop? And Officer Brewer's like, you can call me Nicole.
And she's like, no, thank you. I'll call you Officer Brewer.
Call me Nicole, she said. It's a living. And then Morgan's like, well, why did you become a police officer? And Nicole is like, because I sucked at everything else I tried. Oh,
no, if that was true, she'd be a PSO. She'd be a public transport officer.
Sick burn. So blah blah blah, they're having this conversation and Morgan's like, well, does it affect you, you know, like, I mean, in your head? Brewer gulped the rest of her wine. Not too many people think about that aspect of it, she said. I love my job, but it's hard sometimes, like when you have to deal with brutality,
like police brutality.
I mean, well. Just wait. It gets better, worse. I'm not sure how to describe this. Then Morgan's like, oh, but you don't see brutality every day, do you?
It's hard on the streets.
And then,
so hard.
And then Brewer's like, well, there's physical brutality. And then there's brutality of the soul.
Fucking hell.
And then it's like, whoa. Her eyes bore into mine, and I knew that she was entrusting me with something special and exclusive. I felt honored and guilty for objectifying her. Officer Brewer was not just a badge in a uniform. She was a person, and she was probably a woman who cried every now and then, if only on the inside.
Jesus.
And then it's like, wait. When I finally got the gumption to speak, all I could say was, thank you for all that you do.
I feel like I feel like we do need to say this, even though I hate saying it, but like, obviously this is very similar to, you know, I'm trying to jump ahead of people getting on here being like hashtag not all police. Very similar to totally. Not all men. Obviously,
yep.
There are good people in the police force. I have friends in the police force, whatever. What we're talking about here are systematic issues.
Yeah, and it's a good point to make because I think people can be quick to assume that we would be singling out individual police officers with this kind of commentary. And like, sometimes that is true. Sometimes there are truly, truly awful police officers who need to be called out and to be absolutely stripped of their position of power in society. But most of the time, the things that we take issue with are those structural problems.
Yeah, for instance,
that are well documented.
For instance, a policeman high-fiving a white supremacist in a rally in Melbourne. That police officer, not great. But the fact that he could continue with his job, systemic.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such a bummer that you have to even make that.
I hate the fact, and you know, we can get rid of this, but I truly hate the fact that every time these conversations happen, you have to have these caveats on it, where it's like, actually, if you just exercise critical thought, you would realize that nobody is saying that every single person of anything is a certain way. You're talking about...
That would be ridiculous.
Yeah, like you're talking about broader picture things, and there can be good people who are in the police, you know? It's not a mutually exclusive thing, but the system is very obviously broken. We need to move past this.
So getting back to the story, it gets, you know, there's a lot of like idolization of this role of the police officer happening in this story, which, you know, for some that probably speaks too loudly and is like, that's really hot. And for people like me, I was like, no, thank you. So then it gets a bit more awkward and the policewoman leaves. And then later at 1 a.m., Morgan's about to go to sleep. And then she hears this loud knocking on her door and she's like frazzled by it, which is fair because it's 1 a.m. in the morning. And she thinks that it's her like...
crazy neighbor.
Bonkers neighbor. Yeah. And then it's Nicole back again, still in her uniform. And that shits me. Like, do not turn up on my doorstep at 1 a.m., for a fucking booty call or for whatever, in your uniform. Yeah. Only wear your uniform if it's official police business.
Also, she'd be so stanky.
Oh, absolutely. Like, what has she been doing for, like, seven hours or
do
whatever?
Do those things breathe? I don't know. Probably not enough for how stanky she'd
be. Not with that amount of starch in it. I mean, it doesn't seem to faze Morgan. Officer Brewer pushes Morgan against the wall and lots of, like, passionate kissing happening. Pretty abruptly, to be honest.
That's a lot of fucking build-up.
It's so much build-up.
Like, what did she do? She just went home and thought about it for, like, 7 hours and was like,
I guess.
I'm going back.
I'm sorry, but, like, what? You couldn't wait until the next day and, like, send her a text
and,
or
like,
something?
What were you doing? Like, sure, maybe a late-night booty call, but, like, 11 p.m. max, you know?
Also, you have to establish that that's even on the table before you can do, like... It is a bold move to rock up on someone's door at 1 a.m. when you've never even, like, overtly flirted or, like, kissed or anything. Like, I just, the audacity of that move, I cannot deal with that. Like, even if I was into someone, I'd be like, this is bold.
Yeah. I'd be like, what are you doing? I'd be like, look, I think you're hot, but I'm going to have to say no on principle, and you've done this.
Yeah, this is, like, quite a pathetic move that you've done. But, you know, Morgan's fine with it. They are making out and it's really hot in the house. So she suggests that they go out the back into the backyard.
Wait, so they're like making out in the house. And then she's like, wow, it's just really hot. Let's go outside. Like, not like, let's take off our clothes.
No, I don't know. Apparently it's really hot. Like, it's a hot summer's night. 1 a.m. steamy hot.
Okay, all right.
So Nicole goes to go down on Morgan. She's sitting on like a bench thing and Morgan's like all hot and bothered. Like, she's been fantasizing about this for months. So she's like ready to go. And then Nicole kind of like lingers, teasing her. And it's like, I opened my eyes to see her looking up at me with a smirk. She was tormenting me, but I knew it was only to assert control. I could see how she probably made a great cop.
I mean, there's nothing more we can really say on that. Our opinion is already clear.
It is known. Anyway, so she has this wild orgasm. They go over to the fence and then Morgan gets down on her knees and essentially Nicole kind of like fucks her face. Yeah, that's the best way to describe what happens then.
Why is there so much movement? Like, it's like every new position needs to be in a new spot in the house. Like, why?
I don't know.
And now we'll walk to a bench.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but no idea. And then afterwards, once Nicole has come and she's done up her pants, Nicole's like, yum.
Oh.
And I cannot. It would only be worse if she was like, yummy. Oh. You look like you were like physically repulsed then.
Yeah, I did. I had a real physical reaction to that. I really don't like comments on taste during sex.
Oh, like you taste really good. Or...
No, I don't enjoy it.
Huh, that's interesting. Mm. I learned so much about you throughout this, and so does everyone else.
We learn together. I learn about myself as well.
Same. It's really nice. And I love that it's like, yes, Abby, tell me about your sexual preferences and also your beliefs on abolition. I mean, you're a complex lady.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I wouldn't like kick somebody out for doing it, but I just always am like,
yummy, get out.
Time to leave. You have broken one of my unspeakable rules.
Well, I think now is a good time to take a quick break, and then I'll tell you the last story.
Goodio.
Goodio? He's not in. Get out.
I was really hoping that would fly under the radar.
No. No way. That's too good. I'm crying.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The last story I want to tell you about is called Hollis. It's set at a anti-terrorism boot camp.
Sexy. What does it sound like? Fucking that's already Cadet like... Kelly or some shit.
Oh my god. It's so funny you bring that up because that is exactly what I had in mind reading this story. But, you know, for those who have seen it, hold that. Hold that image in your mind throughout this story.
All right.
So they are in the middle of a drill. And this story is told from the perspective of the protagonist, whose name is Jen. So the leader, who's called Special Agent Hollis.
Sorry.
You know,
Special Agent Hollis.
There's so many titles and things.
How do you not get confused?
I don't claim to understand them. So Special Agent Hollis calls upon Jen to come up to the front of this group and do a demonstration about being arrested with another participant. And so Jen has to essentially act out like a role play where she's being the perp. I think that's the lingo. and this other participant is being the
cop. What's the color of a 2-cent piece? Copper, copper.
Your brain is like a beautiful flower. There's so many layers. Just peel back the petals and it keeps on giving. So, Jen has been fantasizing about Hollis like all afternoon because she's a real like hard ass, you know, the stereotypical.
I'm just thinking that like now I'm just thinking the police is just a hotbed of lesbian fantasies.
Well, this book would lead me to believe that, yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. Let's go with that.
I would much rather imagine that than
the realities.
So she's been fantasizing about Hollis this whole time, imagining her as like a dominatrix kind of character, because she's, yeah, super hard ass, like really, really like drilling them into the ground, you know? And so as she's like doing this role play, Jen, you know, doesn't just let herself be handcuffed. She like kind of resists a bit and she's like, you know, not everyone goes down easy. And then Hollis is like, but eventually everybody goes down.
Oh my God.
And then Hollis forces her to the ground with like quite brute force, cuffs her, but closes the cuffs around her wrists and a quote, tighter than any law enforcement agency allowed. And then when Jen like tries to like push up against Hollis, Hollis shoves her like face down, like smashes her cheek into the grass.
Hot.
It's like, do we need to dissect the problems with this?
No.
Hollis says, and this is in front of like a whole class, she's like, good girl. And then like discreetly and gently rubs her wrist, like so no one else can see it. And I was just like, this is fucked. Like, this is a demonstration. You're teaching police officers how to interact with people. And it's like part of your like elaborate flirtation. Like, I don't know. No.
Yeah. I mean, there's layers there. It's very work in a probes.
Oh, yeah. But Jen is loving it. Hollis tells Jen to go and wait in her office. And so Jen goes there. And then when she gets there, she, like, kneels down on the ground in between the floor and the desk. Like, I assume there's some kind of seat in there. Seems like a weird move to me, but okay.
Is it worse if there's no seat or, like, there is a seat and she's just chosen to kneel?
I don't know. I don't know. And like maybe it's some kind of like, you know, dom sub signal, but that's not expressed in the book. So
yeah, I was going to say it definitely is a dom sub thing, but like, but they're not in a relationship.
So no, like, they've never like met before.
I would be very confronted if I just walked into a room and there was somebody like kneeling in my office and I'd be like,
even if I was a dom, I'd be like, the fuck are you doing on my floor?
We didn't talk about this.
How presumptuous of you.
All I did was smash your face into the ground and cuff you. Like, why are you jumping to conclusions?
Absolutely. Anyway, Hollis arrives and she's like, well, I see that you're capable of being obedient. And then she like grabs and pulls a handful of Jen's hair to like pull her head back.
I mean, it's actually just a point of contention. It's actually like not at all obedient because she was never asked to kneel. So, like, she was asked to go to the room. So just her being in the room is
you
obedient,
are such a stickler
kneeling.
For rules. You would make such a bitchy dom be like, did I tell you to kneel? Get the fuck up.
I said, wait for me in the room. You should be in a state of stasis.
Just, like, gravitate
neither
here.
Neither sitting nor... Yeah, neither sitting nor standing.
So yeah, so she grabs a handful of her hair and like sort of like pulls her head back so that they can have eye contact essentially. And Hollis is like, you are well trained. And Jen doesn't speak. She waits for permission to speak. And then Hollis essentially instructs
her
to strip.
Wow, they have a lot. They have a lot of things happening for zero communication.
Zero. And obviously the way that it's written, it's very clear that Jen is well versed in playing the role of a sub and being submissive, but none of it is spoken
like,
out
that's
loud.
Different with different people.
Exactly.
Like what that is a different
and
thing.
I just can't, I mean, I can't believe we're having this conversation again, but you know. So Hollis instructs her to strip and then she tells her to stand 2 steps away from the desk, eyes on me, bend at the waist and grasp the edge. And so they talk a bit and it's kind of, you know, all along the lines of like Hollis being like, how dare you disrupt my class? Sort of like really building up this kind of dominant kind of character. Then she's like, I want you to make me come and then I'll decide on a suitable punishment for you. And like, ah, that's hot, but also. And so Jen goes down on Hollis until she comes. And like the like sex parts were like pretty sexy.
Yeah.
Which cool. is, you know, anyway.
It's a positive. It's,
yeah. And once she comes, she instructs Jen to get onto the ground, face down, ass up.
Isn't there a song that's like, face down, ass up, something, something? Is there?
I don't know.
Face down, ass up, that's the way I like to fuck.
It sounds like a cheerleading chant. Like, face down, face ass down, up.
That's the way we like to fuck.
F-U-C-K, fuck. While she's got her face down, Hollis starts getting out of an array of props. She gets out a
in her office?
Yeah.
Hollis.
Well, I mean, they're everyday items. They're things like, you know, just things you'd have lying around, like a wooden hairbrush and like a ruler and like a riding crop, you know, just like everyday stuff.
Everyday anti-terrorism stuff.
And so she gets the riding crop and she starts to whip Jen. Would we call it whip if it's with a riding crop? What's the appropriate word for that? Because it's not a whip, no, it's a crop. I feel like that's something...
Cropter?
I feel like it's something that we should have learned from My Dad Wrote a Porno, but I don't think I learned much from that.
I don't think we should have learned anything from My Dad Wrote a Porno. Except for what not to learn.
Yeah. So she starts... I'm just going to say whipping. She starts whipping her with this riding crop and Hollis is like, feel free to count if it helps or cry if you need to. And so Jen's counting as she's whipping her. She gets to 15 and it notes the cool counterpoint of Hollis's hand as she comforted the reddened skin relaxed Jen and a tear slipped from her eye. And like, I did like the inclusion of that. It's like a nod to like a bit of aftercare, but I mean, what's a little bit of aftercare in a sea of like problematic lack of consent and communication?
It's good. It's good to note the positive things, Sam. Yep. It's good to
note. It's a little crumb to keep us going.
Love kernels.
And then Hollis spreads Jen's butt cheeks apart and starts giving her a rim job. And, you know, starts talking about how like if she had a strap on in her office, she would fuck Jen in the ass so hard that she'd come for weeks.
I'm surprised she doesn't have a strap on in
her office. With everything else she has in
everything
her
else. Like, where's the line?
Oh, yeah, she's also got nipple clamps in her office.
I mean, come on.
Which she starts playing with on Jen. And she also starts fingering her. She's using three fingers and then increasing to four. And this is a quote. Before Jen was ready, and the stretching pressure pain almost made Jen come immediately, but she wasn't allowed to yet. And I gotta say, four fingers without any warning. That's a lot of that's so many fingers.
That's many fingers. You know what I consider whenever it's like written about four fingers? I'm always like, is it in like a pincery? Is it four like flat?
Like
fingers?
A flat palm? Because that's a lot of girth.
That's very wide. Yeah. Or is it like, but you can't really get four fingers unless you don't use your pinky, I guess. Your pinky's just like sitting out like you're sipping tea. It's like a weird duck head going into somebody's.
Also, if you do it that way, apologies to everyone listening who can't see us trying to do this over video chat. you don't get a whole lot of depth that way.
No, it would be a very shallow kind of
Yeah. See, like, I would prefer, like, two fingers with a come hither motion any day over, like, a weird shallow duck beak situation.
Yeah, or, like, if you're four, is it, do you still do, like, the come hither and it's just, like, your whole, like, touching your whole insides?
I don't know. I don't have answers to that.
I've never had four fingers.
I've never either. I think that's becoming very clear from this conversation. I think people listening would be like, you have no idea. And I don't. I truly don't.
No, I don't either. Logistically, You know, I'd give it a try. I guess I could put four fingers inside of myself.
Again, you wouldn't get the kind of length. Like, it's, unless you got really, have you got really long arms?
No, that's true. You'd really have to, like, curl your arm around yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you'd be able to, like, lie on your back. You'd have to, like, hunch over, like, standing.
Like, I was picturing, like, curled in a figure C on the bed. Like, oh, yeah. That... in a fetal position.
That was
not standing up, hunch.
Yeah, look, either way, it's not sounding like super sexy, so
yeah, I'd put a candle on.
Oh, it's nice. Romance yourself. Like, to
romance yourself before a four finger tree.
It's like looming up four fingers. Here we go. Well, okay, so where are we? Da-da-da, four fingers, not allowed to come. Eventually Hollis asks if she would like to come, because, you know, part of the power play is withholding the orgasm, which I get. That's very hot. I'm also really impressed when people can control it to that extent.
Yeah, me too. I'm always like, oh, I always run into trouble with that. Like, it's either happening or it's not happening. I don't really have this, like, this thing where I can just be like, hold off, hold off.
I guess you'll never be a, you know, a completely subservient sub. That's, you know?
Yeah, well, maybe I'll just be a brat.
I was just going to say, you could be an orgasm-y brat.
I'll be an orgasm brat.
I love that. I love that for you. Finally, Hollis, like, asks her if she wants to come. And then Jen begged and cried, unable to think beyond the pounding fist in her cunt. And the nut.
Whoa.
Yeah, it turned into a fist. Like, that came out of nowhere in this book. I was like, well, hello. We went from four fingers to a fist real quick.
Do you go in with the four fingers, then curl up?
No, that, no. No, 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 no. No, no. Surely duck. It has to be duck bill at this point. Yeah. I don't have experience with fisting, but I have heard that the duck bill, but then once you're in, like, spreading the fingers apart, I've heard that that is a fucking wild ride if you're into it.
Well, that used to be a medieval torture device.
Oh, was... God.
I mean, not with someone's hand. It was called, I'm pretty sure it's called, like, the pear or something. It looked like a pear.
Oh,
yeah. Like a metal machine, and then it would be inserted into a woman's vagina, and then it would just be, like, spread, like, beyond kind of what a hand would do in there.
That's fucked.
This is why I'm terrible at
fisting,
not thinking about things during sex. Because I'd be like, here's a fun fact.
Unable to think beyond the pounding fist in her cunt and the lightning sharp pressure on her nipples, Jen opened herself up to the pressure in her cunt. A lot of use of the word cunt. I'm into it. It's good. To the pressure in her cunt, her clit, her nipples. The dark, blurry edges of her vision overpowered the light and she surrendered, falling headfirst into the abyss.
Did she faint?
Well, I think she goes into subspace, essentially. And kind of, like, blacks out a little bit. And eventually when she comes to, Hollis is got dressed, she's put away all of her props, and then she just says, tomorrow, try not to disrupt my class again. And then walks out. And I was like, fucking boss move.
Oh, that's a power that's move.
That's really
that's
good.
Such a power move. I mean, you know, as I said, problematic, but that's a mic drop.
Right?
Moment. That's very
so
good.
So good. I didn't love any of them. I thought they were a bit cringe at times, but interesting to see how the authors sort of played with the power dynamics of cops.
Yeah, I think, so I read this article that gets my award for favorite article names.
Ooh.
It's called, What You Gonna Do When They Come All Over You?
That's great. Shit, yeah.
It was called, What Police Themes in Male Erotic Video Reveal About Leather Sexual Subjectivity? It was written in 2003, so it was essentially around police themes in gay porn. And there's just one line that I thought was kind of sums up a lot of what we're saying in a very smart academic way. It was saying, the very figure of the cop who embodies the coercive power of the state, therefore, is seen as both benevolent and menacing, protector and oppressor.
Oh, that is good.
Right? I think that's kind of the thing. Like, it's police have this, all of these ideals attached to them, even if you are from a group that faces police oppression.
Mm.
The mainstream story of police is them as protectors.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's also kind of dealing with this dichotomy that you have to kind of hold, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I think it really captures very nicely the kind of like complexities that are part of this topic. Like, it's not as simple as them being one or the other. It is both at the same time. And that makes it, yeah, just a bit more tricky to grapple with than just like thinking in more of a like a
binary.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
I think it's really interesting to think of, like, with Black Lives Matter and all of this stuff coming out, there has been a lot more of a focus on the way that we are presented stories about the police. So, for instance, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, they came out, Andy Samberg came out with this whole thing about that they would be looking at the ways that they represented police in their show.
Yep.
And there are so many shows about police, whether that's, you know, these detectives or bumbling cops or whatever. But I think it's interesting to think about what their representation in erotica does for people.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and I'm not sure it necessarily humanizes the police, or at least the ones that you've read seem to still have this real distinct, because the fetishization is on them as police. There's this real distinct line between police and civilians.
Yeah, definitely.
Even when they're naked and fisting somebody.
Yeah, and there was definitely like, yeah, this was sort of recurrent theme of authority and that clear distinction of being like, they are the one who holds the power in this situation. And like how that can be part of a sexual dynamic. It wasn't about getting to know the human inside, you know? It was about how can we leverage this to be part of the sexual fantasy.
Yeah.
I also think something that was interesting about this book in particular that we haven't really spoken about but is worth just, you know, I think it's worth bringing up is that we often sexualize women in roles that are traditionally held by men. Like when you think of women who are, you know, police women, if you think of women who play sports, women who join the military, women who work as tradies, often these women also get kind of labeled as lesbians because they are, and I'm sure plenty of them are, but because they occupy this kind of like traditionally masculine space, which I think is interesting. I read some parts of a report that came out in 2015, which found it was about sexual harassment in the Victorian police force in particular. And then there was also another report in 2019. They both said largely the same thing, that it's unacceptably high, particularly of the police women in the force. And what they sort of went into was that being a victim of sexual harassment or predatory behavior or sex discrimination as a police officer is not seen as being consistent with this kind of like overarching identity of being a strong and resilient police officer, because that's the kind of culture that they're expected to adhere to be strong and unemotional, to not need to seek assistance, to be, you know, impenetrable by the kinds of traumatic shit that they are expected to face all the time, and therefore apply that to their own, you know, work places and lives and whatnot as well. And so this report was kind of going into how, because often the police culture also comes with this kind of like strong personal identification with the role, like people personally identify with the role, they put you through so much so you kind of start to bond like a family. And so all of these things like feed off each other to create this culture where you're not able to sort of express your emotions healthily, and then they kind of manifest into all kinds of outcomes, one of which being, you know, a huge amount of sexual harassment, and a lot of which just goes without being reported because that's not in line with the expectations.
And I think that's really an important point.
I found, like, just to sort of wrap it up, I went into this super fascinated, sort of like as you said at the beginning, really fascinated about the way that these issues intersect and how they intersect with like specifically how we sexualize people in these positions of power. And I was mind blown that there is not a lot out there in the academic world about this. You know, plenty of work has been done in the space of like the role that police play in society at large, but there just doesn't seem to be much in terms of how it, you know, how it interacts with sexuality, essentially, which I just found to be a shame and also fascinating at the lack of it, really.
Yeah, I had the same thing. Like, there was very, very little about this aspect of people's lives, particularly for something that, like, you know, as you say, you get strippers.
Yeah, it's super common.
And it's always, like, a police person. You know?
Absolutely.
I mean, I think it would be really easy to listen to this episode and consider that, you know, we're massive downers and we hate cops and whatever. And I mean, if that's the way you want to think, that's fine. But I think, and I was trying to find the quote and I can't entirely find it, but it's another like amazing abolitionist, Mariam Carber. It's essentially, you know, what we're talking about isn't about like hatred of any one group or trying to destroy any one group. It's about focusing on safety.
Yeah.
And what is it that makes our community safe? And we have gotten report after report after report that tells us that increased policing does not make communities safer.
Yeah.
It does not make the people in the communities feel safer. What we're saying is we need to kind of think beyond that.
Yeah. A lot of very like well-known abolitionists have talked at length about how it's, you know, it's not about taking things away. It's about adding in things to create the kind of communities and society where we don't need policing and prisons as a air quote solution.
Yeah. So really this is just abolitionist propaganda wrapped up in erotica.
that's exactly what it is. You're all welcome.
Books, love.